My name is Jeannie Runkle. I am 42 years old. Today is June 16th, 2013. Happy Father's Day. We are in San Diego, California, and I am here today with my daughter, Andy Decker.
Hello, my name is Andy Decker. I am 22 years old. It is June 16th, 2013. We are in San Diego, California, and I am here with my mother.
So I am here as part of the Military Voices Initiative. I recently completed a course called Reboot, which takes veterans and folks that are getting out of the military currently and tries to give them kind of a head start on life skills and getting a job. A lot of veterans have been in for, 8, 12, 25 years, and they've never interviewed. They've never worn a tie. They don't know how to deal in the corporate environment. And with the economy as kind of shifty as it is at the moment, these guys really need all the, help they can get, leg up into that world that they know nothing about. Mm-hmm. And so I'm one of their only female Marines, and so they asked me to come and record my story.
Awesome. We're going to start with talking about why you enlisted. What made you, because it is a special thing to be the only woman Marine that they had there. And so why did you enlist?
I am originally from Pennsylvania. Yay, Pennsylvania. Out there, and I always said, out there with the cows and the trees and the corn. And not a whole lot else. My high school counselor was a zero on the helpful scale. He actually had been my parents' high school counselor 20 years previous. Wow. Little entrenched in his job and not really caring how that stuff worked out. And I was a bit of an underachiever. Yes, I was. Not for lack of, brain power, but I just really didn't care. Mm-hmm. And so, the end of my high school career was not exactly stellar, and so I was not destined to go off to Penn State like everybody else. I was going to have to go to a satellite campus and spend 2 more years at home, which, let's not do that. And so I had actually set up an appointment with an Army recruiter. And, I show up to the guidance counselor's office, and no Army recruiter. And I was like, so where did he go? And the guidance counselor said, I canceled that. You're wasting his time. You don't need to be doing that. Okay, honey, so what am I supposed to actually do? You're not really guiding me, so you dropped me off at the curb, and now what? Mm-hmm. And so I went and met with the Air Force recruiter, and they had some great plans. They were going to teach me Russian and put me up in an AWACS and float me over, Eastern Bloc countries, because you got to remember, this was 1988-89. Mm-hmm. And that was going to be awesome. I was reasonably fluent in French, and, Russian was going to be fun.
Going to see the world.
Sounded interesting, right?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, and the sad part of, I guess not sad, because it took me down a completely different path. But, the Air Force recruiter, I just didn't show up for the second appointment. He simply did not show up. And I wonder to this day if it was a setup, because the Marine Corps recruiter stuck his head out and was like, hey,
shucks.
Hasty. You can wait. Come on in. Have a seat. Right. 2 hours later, my name was signed, and there we went.
What was your feeling at that moment after signing the paperwork? Was it excitement? Were you anxious?
It was kind of a combination of all of that, I guess we shouldn't swear. There was a little, the voices in my head were swearing just a little bit. Like, oh, holy crap, what have we all done? And we're going to do what?
Uh-huh.
And also, there were no, Vietnam was a long time ago at that point. There were no world conflicts going on. And so it really, I kind of looked at it more as like a job I couldn't quit, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're going to go do a thing. I signed up. I actually signed for 6 years to guarantee my MOS, which was AD. So I was going to be trained, and he made it sound super fancy. It actually was, as an aviation mechanic.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was kind of funny. They sent me off, you know, to take the ASVAB. Actually, at that point, I had taken it. And so they had the results. And some of the questions were just really, really funny. Like, here are screw heads. Mm-hmm. Which screw driver would you actually use? Really?
Really?
Because I actually knew those things.
Yeah.
And I knew the pointy end was the one I wanted. And apparently it gave me, like, this huge mechanical score.
Oh, wow.
Like, oh, my God. The pointy end is. We're going to make her a mechanic.
Phillips.
Yeah. Same. Yeah, and that literally was what it was.
Uh-huh.
And so, yeah, and so I walked out of there with the standard folder with, you know, the Marine and cami paint and that lovely tinfoil sticker that said, my daughter is a United States Marine. Yeah, and my family and I hadn't necessarily been just on the bestest of terms at that point because, mm-hmm. you know, I was basically hell on wheels is what it amounted to. And so when I went home, it was more of a, so here, look what I've gone and done. Screw you, man. Yeah, I thought my mother was going to have a freaking heart attack. But, yeah, that was the beginning of lots of interesting things.
And then we fast forward to boot camp and being in, I think a lot of us have ideas of what boot camp is before I'm sure mm-hmm. you went. And how was that different? What did you actually experience?
So there was a gap. It was about 6 or 8 months because they didn't
anticipate.
Well, yeah, because they don't run that many at the time, that, you know, many female Marines through Parris Island, and that's the only place you go.
Okay.
And so I had to wait for kind of like the next class to begin. And so, mm-hmm. you know, sit around and twiddle. And they weren't really, it wasn't like a true, say, Rossi where, you know, they take you in and make you run around and make you do stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It was just like, yeah, you thought, yeah, mm-hmm. just make sure you come back when it's time. And so there wasn't a whole lot of prep. I knew I was supposed to run, so I ran.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew I needed some upper body, so I did some stuff. But what else was there to do? I didn't know.
Yeah, you had no.
And, yeah, the processing center with MEPS was a barrel of fun. And you just kind of got a taste of, wow, this is no longer mine. I don't get a choice anymore. I put my hand in the air, and I said, this is what I'm going to do, and here I am, and take me, I'm yours kind of thing. And, wow. That, yeah.
How did the other women you were with handle that versus how you dealt with it?
I mean, the Marines take you in and break you down and make you into what they want you to be, which is basically, well, a killing machine is, at the end of the day, I mean, there's nothing else
for it. The military, of course.
We are cannon fodder.
Mm-hmm.
And so I expected that, I think, at least. But, yeah, a lot of people ask me, what was the hardest part about boot camp?
Mm-hmm.
And I will absolutely, 100%, every single time answer the 72 other women that were in my group.
It wasn't 72 at the end, right? How many was it at that point?
No, there were 73, including me, and we graduated, I think it was 51. Because... Okay. They just couldn't hack. They didn't realize. I mean, to me, there wasn't a draft. There wasn't, you know, like, I know a lot of post 9/11 vets, and pretty much 100% of the time they say, I did it because of 9/11. I had to, you know, serve my country and defend my country and do this thing and, you know, blah, blah, blah. For us, it was that there was no, you know, impetus. There was none of that.
Mm-hmm.
And so you kind of had to know you were going in, you put your hand in the air and said, pick me.
Mm-hmm.
You don't really get a choice at that point to not participate.
Mm-hmm.
But some of them did. Cried and kicked and flailed and bit until, you know. And you could drop, and some
okay.
of them did. There was, at one point, one of the, not the senior drill instructor, but one of her minions, I guess, that was just, she was harsh but not cruel. They were all harsh. I mean, hello, it's freaking boot camp.
Mm-hmm.
But there was no cruelty in it. There wasn't, punishment was given when it was needed, and it wasn't, you know, so out of hand that, you know, kicking and biting and flailing and screaming about it. And these girls got together, and they decided that it was personal. And so they made it personal back the other way, and one pushed the other down the stairs, and she broke her ankle, and they blamed it on the drill instructor. And that was pretty much the last time we saw that DI, and she was gone, you know. And then the girl, obviously, with a broken ankle, got her wish and got dropped.
Mm-hmm.
I had the hardest time with that because you volunteered. You said, pick me. Mm-hmm. And if you didn't mean it, go. Go join the Navy. Go join the Army. You know, go away. You do not deserve to be a United States Marine at this point. You just don't.
Because do you think that being in another branch would have been easier for this woman? Women, they would have cut it, but not so much in the Marine Corps?
Knowing women from other branches,
probably. Okay. And is that a physical aspect? Is it an emotional aspect?
The physical toughness they will beat into you. They will absolutely teach you how to do 9 billion push-ups until, you know, you can touch your nose to the floor and come back up again. Mm-hmm. The physical toughness will come.
Okay.
It's the mental toughness that a lot of people, men or women, lack. And you don't get by in the Marine Corps without it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they just didn't realize that.
Mm-hmm. How do you think your experience in boot camp differed from your male counterparts?
That's a good question. There was actually a guy from my same town that was there at the same time with me.
Really?
Yeah. And I remember toward the end, they in the chow hall, they had the male recruits actually serving us at one point because we really weren't allowed near them.
Interact. And
yeah. And in the world at that point, sexual harassment was a fascinating and interesting thing. I mean, we hadn't gotten too much past the 70s where anything goes.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, we would march past the male platoons and, you know, I could sort of hear the male drill instructors. I can hear them. What's that smell? What? Yeah, it really crazy stuff. And so that was the extent of the interaction.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so to see somebody from home, it's been 2 months. I've been, you know, doing all this stuff, and, you know, you don't really get to think about home too much, you know it. But to see somebody that you knew across, you know, it was like a pan of mashed potatoes.
Mm-hmm.
You can't look, you can't talk, you can't interact, you can't anything. And so it was like eye contact, acknowledgement that I'm like, oh, look, there is a world outside of a push-up. Sweet. So I don't know. I never saw him again.
Okay.
I think, I would guess they were harsher.
Harsher in all aspects?
Yeah. I mean, we were very much past there were rules.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everybody seen Private Pile and, you know, Full Metal Jacket. There were rules.
Mm-hmm.
No touching, no swearing. And I think that the females took that very seriously.
Okay.
And didn't cross those lines. I don't think the men did. I think there was a little more blurred interactions.
Yeah, because they would still have a certain idea of what boot camp should be, regardless of the rules.
And I would agree. Okay, come on. Yeah, you can't punch me in the head because let's just like draw that line.
Uh-huh.
But beyond that, I mean, it's not freaking summer camp.
Yeah,
you were there to be that. You were not here to like paddle around in a freaking rowboat. So, yeah. So it was an interesting experience, and to me, it's part of a cohesive unit. You are meant to come together, you know, and you know, that guy's got your back, you've got his. You're meant to be a team, and I think that escaped a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, remember, I've come from, you know, the cows and the trees in the corn in Pennsylvania. There was no diversity. And I didn't really know what happened outside of my little chunk of Pennsylvania until I set foot on Parris Island.
Mm-hmm.
And that was kind of a rude awakening in some respects, because these women had come from all over the country and had very different experiences and very different perceptions of how things should be and what they were owed. There was, you know, a sense of entitlement, like, well, I shouldn't have to do that. Really? Well, you have to do the same thing the rest of us have to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I will forever and ever and always remember my bunkmate. I know the Army calls them battle buddies, but she was my bunkmate. Because, and it was sheer luck of the alphabetical draw. And her name was Rakowski. And she was a sweet girl, but she just really wasn't quite getting it. Not for lack of effort. She absolutely, you know, was 100% giving it what she had, but she wasn't always quite getting there. And so I always tried to help. You know, I would do my thing, whatever that thing was, and then try and make sure her thing was up to par. You know, is your rack made? Is, you know, are you shined? Are you, you know, all of those things. And pretty much uniformly and across the board, I was also down on my face doing push-ups with her, because when she didn't finish and I had helped, even though they want you to be a teammate, you're not supposed to help, apparently. And so, yeah, I probably did double the amount of push-ups that your average person did, just simply because I tried to help. It was interesting. So I remember at the very end, so, you know, they beat you for 3 months, and now you're in the best shape you're probably ever going to be in your whole entire life. And one of the last things we did was a 12-mile hike wearing, you know, full gear and a 75-pound pack on your back. And the whole thing was single file line. Nobody talks. Nobody does anything. Single file. You just keep going with the guy in front of you and off, you know, and hike until somebody tells you not to. And I could see one of the girls just, she was failing. She was not, I can't do it. And so I dropped back and was walking on, you know, talking to her. Come on, you've got to absolutely finish this. You can't, you know, just kind of trying to talk her through it and just give her something to focus on other than her obvious discomfort and, you know, pain and whatever she was going through. Yeah. Again, this wasn't push-up land. This was stop. You will stand here. And I could still remember, I mean, I'm about 5'10", and the drill instructor was this tiny little thing, and she was fierce. But, yeah, she stood there and just stared at, you will stand here. And we watched the column, like, march into the sunset, basically. And they got several hundred yards away, and she was like, you will run. And she's running along beside me, screaming at me. Yeah, that was pretty awesome. Until I caught up and got myself back into line. So not only did I march the 12 miles, I sprinted. Yeah, sprinted that last little tidbit. That was fun. But I think it gave me a sense of place and a sense of, you know, I obviously discipline.
Would you still go back for her and try and help her keep up, knowing what the punishment for that was now?
Right? Yeah, I would. Just someone that is obviously trying, right? Like I said, I had no patience for the girls at the beginning that, you know, whine and cry and pee themselves because, oh, this is harder than I thought it was going to be. What did you think it was going to be, kids? Seriously?
And there was going to be ice cream cones and ponies.
Oh, no, clowns are scary. Yeah, and pony rides, but there were no ponies. And so, therefore, they were disappointed and, like, well, it should be easier because I thought it was supposed to be easier. Well, sunshine, it just doesn't really work that way. But to me, if you're there and you're giving it an honest effort, I will absolutely help you. If that's what you need, I will help you. And obviously, to my own detriment, but, yeah.
It's interesting that that was punished, that they didn't want you to go back when so often we hear about men that didn't leave a man behind, went back, you know, saved their buddy that was wounded, but they didn't want you to stop.
You know what? When you say that, you know what it is? It is absolute obeying an order. You are given an order. You do not disobey.
Okay.
And that's what that is. That's exactly what that is. So it's the team thing, right? They, no man left behind, and you got your back and all of that. But it is, if I tell you to go eat the snail, you might want to eat the snail. That's the order. You know, lick it first. I don't care what you're doing.
But you're going to eat the snail.
You might want to just eat the snail and just get that out of the way. But
escargot.
See, people do it all the time. But that's what it is. It's teaching you under any circumstance, you will absolutely do what I say.
Do you think the punishment then should have been more severe for disobeying an order?
It's pretty damn severe. I mean, it wasn't.
I mean, that's severe, but you still decided that at the end of the day, you would have waited for her. You would have tried to help her catch up. So then was the punishment not severe enough?
Yeah, see, that's where, you know, my own mind kind of comes into the equation. And, yeah.
As much as they tried to break you down, they could never, there was a part of you that they were never going to have.
Well, yeah, you have to still have some independent judgment in that. And it's like, okay, there are no bullets. There, you know, nobody's going to die today. But it also trains you to react in situations where there is no time for conscious thought. You just have to react. And so that's, yeah, I probably would, I would go back and do it again, but.
What's the single most important skill or experience that shaped you from boot camp?
Wow. Like I said, it gave me discipline. It gave me kind of a purpose that, you know, it's like I didn't know who I was, where I was going to go, how I was going to get there. But knowing that I, out of, you know, millions and billions of people in the world, I graduated. I made it through that. And that's pretty cool. And so if I can do that, I can pretty much do anything, right?
Once a Marine, not always a Marine, never an ex-Marine.
No. You were never an ex-Marine. Once a Marine, always. I was very rudely, not rudely, but I was very forcefully. That's a much nicer word.
I don't know if it was forcefully as much as reminded.
Yes. I was reminded at, you know, at this networking breakfast, you had to stand up and say who you are. And, you know, a lot of these guys, I mean, I've been out as long as they've been in is what it amounts to. And so it's like, how am I can't say, you know, and I separated, you know, this many years ago because it has no value. And so, you know, there's probably 70 people in the room and I stand up and say, you know, I'm Junior Uncle, I'm a former Marine, and give my little 2-second speech about what they told us to talk about. And a voice from across the room is like, you are still a Marine. And then, you know, I hear a bunch of very active Marines kind of shouting and, you know, yeah. Once a Marine, always a Marine.
I think I remember a story that you told about swimming across the pool. that I'd love to hear again.
Yeah, no, good catch. I had forgotten that one. So swim qual was brutal. Swim qual was no joke. That was full gear, boots, your M16, because it went everywhere with you.
It was an extension. It was an arm.
It is, yes. Yeah, everybody like it, but this one is mine. Thanks for stopping by. And so you literally, and you had a pack on your back, right? And so you jumped off one of the parts of this swim qual, and a lot of people failed. And if you failed, you just started again. They were like, yep, we're going to recycle you until your ass can swim out of here. And one of the parts, you jumped off the low dive and then proceeded to swim the length of an Olympic-sized pool. And that was toward the end. I mean, you'd been in the pool, you were tired, you know, blah, blah, blah. And another one that I will never, ever, ever forget. And you were supposed to kick on your back, right? So your weapon's across your chest, and you're kicking along, and you got boots, and they're filled with water, and life is just fucking pretty hard. And these were actually the male DIs. And so he's walking along the side of the pool, and I'm right by the edge and staring at me. And he asked, where are you from, recruit? Pennsylvania, sir. Oh, really? Oh, my God. You're a Quaker. Are you a Quaker? And I get what he was trying to do, is basically, like, take my mind off of it, maybe piss me off a little bit. And absolutely, no, sir, I am not a Quaker, sir. Oh, so that, it was fun.
I was like that story.
I can still see him walking beside the pool and the Smokey the Bear hat, shouting down in my face while I'm like kicking and trying desperately not to drown. It was pretty awesome.
At least he didn't ask you if you were Amish, right?
Right. I don't know where he got Quaker. I'm like, seriously, like, think about oatmeal, where'd you get Quaker? But, yeah.
Well, the Quakers settling Pennsylvania.
Yeah, but that's not usually the one you pick out of the air. You pick out Amish.
Yeah,
so
that's true.
Maybe it had oatmeal for breakfast or something. Yeah.
Span of history.
Yeah, maybe that's it. But yeah.
So that was boot camp.
That was, yeah. That was pretty much boot camp, and it was kind of an interesting, here's an interesting segue. So, before that, my best friend was our class valedictorian, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So she was off to Penn State. Well, I kind of wasn't really, I was not the valedictorian. Let's just leave it there. And so our parents, like, her parents were super excited because she was super smart, you know, valedictorian, blah, blah, blah. And mine were just super happy I graduated. I mean, they were just like, wow, look at that. You got the piece of paper. Sweet. So they all got together in the middle and sent the two of us off to the Bahamas first. Yeah, yeah, that was just bad. It just, yeah, there were a lot of things that went on that week that we're just going to not put in the Library of Congress for the rest of eternity. So, but I met someone, like, the last day, and he lived in Chicago, right? And so I had actually gone, okay, run away, I guess is the technical term, run away to Chicago while the six-month gap while I was waiting for boot camp. I didn't want to be home, but I didn't have anywhere else to be. So, like I said, remember that Hell on Wheels phrase I used? Oh, yeah. So I literally, like, they banned me from using my car. Well, fine. So I got in my car, went to the bus station in New York, hopped a bus, and ditched the car, hopped a bus to Chicago to see him. And so then I obviously get shipped off to boot camp, and I go through that whole process where he's been kind of standing by, okay, this whole time, right?
On that speed.
Now, we're not going to discuss, there was a physical issue of his that we had tried to help, but it just really wasn't working out really well. Well, while I was away, he attempted a surgical correction on the more tender parts of the male anatomy in an effort to, let's just say, straighten him up correctly there. So he has gone and done this, like, in theory, for me, because, right?
Poor pumpkin.
You're kind of seeing how this is going to end, right? And so he does the same thing. Gets on a bus, goes to my parents' house. Watch this. So 21 hours, bus, Chicago, Pennsylvania. And then another, what, about 14 hours in the car with my parents. Yay for parents. And they show up to graduation. Realize I have gone in one side, not the other, and I have come out very, very different. I am a cold, hard, killing machine. I really, yeah, I there was no softness left at all. And so we go through graduation, and it's like, oh, you're here. Crap, how about, okay, you're here. And so, you know, obviously we have to get in the car and drive back to Pennsylvania, and now I'm just like, dude, you have got to go. You seriously have to go. And yeah, that same bus station. So I, like, put him in my car. Yes, he was alive. I put him in my car, took him to the bus station, and kind of, okay, you know, have a nice life. And I can still remember, he just looked at me, and he's like, you are the ice queen, and I hope you find a marine and make beautiful icicles together. It was the strangest parting shot. But yes.
Were your fellow graduation mates as cold?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, you don't go through something like that. And you're not supposed to, you know.
Yes.
You're not really supposed to. And I think some people never find it again. They don't find that, like, balance of humanity and kind of soften the edges a little bit.
How long do you think it took you to soften the edges?
Oh, 20 years. Easily. Yeah. It was, I would say 20 years.
Do you think it would be harder for the male counterparts to soften the edges than the women?
Well, society kind of dictates that men don't cry, you know, and all of that. And so, yeah, it's, they don't see a need to necessarily.
Soften the edges.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah, it probably took me 20 years to realize that the steel was still there, but it, yeah, it can be used for a very different purpose, and it doesn't have to be, you know, wielded like a hammer to smash people in the head with.
What do you think helped you soften edges?
time and perspective, probably. Just time and dealing with people and realizing, you know, and kind of working through my issues, because obviously one of the reasons I brought you along today is the fact that you are, yeah, pretty well central to that whole time period. Because one of the last classes that they gave us was, you know, what's going to happen, you're joining the fleet, blah, 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 you know, this is how it's going to look. And we were sitting in classroom style, and they said, look to your left, look to your right. A year from now, only one of you will be left. And so, you know, because I was the friendly sort, I looked at them, I'm like, bye, bitches, because I'm going to be the one that's left. No, yeah, it was me. They were obviously looking at me while I was looking at them. And so I went off to, you know, Tennessee and went through A school, and that was an interesting adventure. And then ended up in lots of different, I went to a couple of naval air stations and ended up in El Toro when it still existed. And I met a guy named Michael Decker. And he was stationed at Pendleton, and I was due to be, now that they had figured out, they actually issued me mail orders. They missed the little F block, and they had issued me 3 years in Okinawa. And they didn't at the time send women to Japan for 3 years. And so they were like, scramble, 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 and they had actually given me orders. They figured it out and gave me orders to Hawaii. And so I was leaving for Hawaii for 3 years, and he was here. So we were like, well, how, you know, we want to stay together, you know, that whole young love, blah, blah, blah. How we get, oh, let's get married. Yes, that is just the best idea.
The answer to everything.
Holy freaking, that's 42. But yeah, we're going to get married. That's the ticket. And then about 3 or 4 days later, it wasn't very long, I discovered that, look at that, I was pregnant. Huh. Yeah. So that just changed the whole face of everything. So I went from an 18-year-old killing machine to a 19-year-old, well, yeah, still a killing machine. However, you know, we got married. He ended up getting deployed for the first, for Desert Storm.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's gone.
Mm-hmm.
So the only person in the whole world that I really know on the, you know, on this coast is, you know, 7,000 miles away,
mm-hmm.
and I'm in a town, I don't know anyone, I don't know anything.
Mm-hmm.
And that was kind of the start, like I said, that 20-year, like, figuring it out,
mm-hmm.
Kind of slogging along and just doing the best I could with what I had, which sadly wasn't a lot.
Mm-hmm.
My father always said that I had to learn everything the hard way. Yeah, that's... It was very, very true, unfortunately, and so it's been a lot of false starts, a lot of, you know, you kind of get to the end of the trail, and you're like, oh, look, it's a wall. It's not actually out, it's a wall, so let me back up and try something else again.
Mm-hmm.
I've always believed that regret, though, is a wasted emotion. If you made a decision, and you made it the with what you had at hand in the best possible way, stick to, you go with it.
Mm.
Why should you regret? Because then that means you were wrong, that, you know, it didn't, whatever that was. So regret is a wasted emotion. I've done some crazy things. I mean, when people, you know, talk about, oh, I used to, no. Here, you know, you don't realize, even myself sometimes looking back, all the things. I am truly lucky in some respects to be alive.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you see a lot of stuff in the news these days about, MST, military sexual trauma. I got to experience that. Thanks for stopping by.
Mm-hmm.
Long before they had a name for it, the command buried it. It was just bad.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think a lot of that stuff stuck in there, and it took me a long time to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah. It's taken me about 20 years, and one of the things that's actually helped, and we'll bring this back to kind of today and where we're at and why we're here and all of that good stuff, was reboot.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, part of not only how to wear a tie and give an interview or life skills, how you think is what's going to happen. How you think is where you're going to end up. So if you think bad things happen to you. And so that's been super beneficial. I think I was finally in a place that I could hear what they had to say, and it's been really good for me.
Mm.
I'm glad that that organization exists. I wish they could run more people through it. I think a lot of people could benefit from their curriculum.
Mm-hmm. Do you think your psychological experiences in boot camp made it so that it was harder to be able to hear those things until now?
Yes and no. I mean, it's a maturity thing. It's a, you know, you're kind of taught to put it in a box and put that box away.
Mm-hmm.
The boxes rebel occasionally.
Mm-hmm.
You can staple them shut, you can glue them all you want, but sometimes the boxes rebel.
The chains, they're
sinking
coming out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mariana's Trench, not deep enough. And so they eventually do come back.
Mm-hmm.
And they all float. Oh, sorry, that's a Stephen King. Anyway, so, yeah. It you got to deal with it. You can't just put it in a box and put it away.
So based on your experiences and based on the things that you did see, it sounds like regret is not something that's in the repertoire of emotions.
No, like I said, I've always tried to make the best decisions that I could.
Mm-hmm.
And sure. Oh, yes. Yep. They've had consequences. They absolutely have, and they always will.
Mm-hmm.
Again, you take it, you suck it up, and you deal with it, and you try to learn. That's the biggest part. It's like you can't, no regret, and make sure, because if you don't learn, you are doomed to repeat, you know, those stupid choices.